Patriots. This is Living with Liberty, your source for common sense and truth, bringing you insight from outside the mainstream. I am your host, Ryan. Today, we'll talk about the Trump indictment, Democrats wanting gas stoves, the Restrict Act, and conservatives once again firing within the circle. Next, on Living with Liberty. Trump has officially been indicted and arraigned at this point. 34 felony charges, supposedly, for fraudulent business expense, I guess, is what Melvin Bragg or Alvin Bragg, whatever his name is, who cares? The guy's a clown. Whatever Manhattan DA there saying what Trump is, what he's indicting Trump on. So Bragg finally managed to put enough supposed evidence in front of the grand jury to get the indictment, to get enough of them to vote to have Trump arraigned. So there you go. Eventually happened. I wasn't so sure last week after they spent a whole week. They couldn't get Trump arraigned. They couldn't get him indicted. That tells me all about the case they were putting in front of a grand jury in New York City, no less, that leans heavily Democrat, 85-15 Democrats, something like that, and they couldn't get Trump arraigned or indicted. Tells you, I guess, a lot. Says a lot about what everybody thinks of these made-up charges at this point. Now, according to an Epoch Times piece by Gary Bai titled, "Trump attorney says former president ready to fight, arraignment is expected early next week." Speculation by legal experts, the case is likely here to center on whether Trump documented the payment as false business records within the Trump organization. That according to the piece. So I'll say it again, if that is the case, if Trump did expense these as an illegal business expense, if you will, then why did the feds decline to prosecute Trump for it prior to running for president in 2016? Why did the FEC decline to prosecute Trump for the supposed hush money payments to Stormy Daniels and there's two of them, I guess, in question here. Why? What changed that all of a sudden, well, the feds said, we're not going to prosecute this, but the Manhattan DA said, yeah, we're going to prosecute this. And the misdemeanor charge, the statute of limitations has run out on that. Felonies, 34 of them for illegal expenses, business expensing. Now, what's changed? Well, the fact is that Biden has been an absolute disaster as president. There's no denying that. His poll numbers are going down again. And couple that with the fact that Trump is actually leading the Republican ticket at this point, it honestly has Democrats running scared, right? You have Joe Biden, who has been just historically unpopular at times during his presidency here, and is on track again to hit those low numbers if he hasn't already. And you have Trump, who has, by all accounts, been the leading Republican candidate pretty much since he announced, probably even before he announced he was going to run in 2024, honestly. That has the Democrats running scared. So what do they have to do? There's nothing. I've said this before. This indictment, there's nothing left for them to try and stop Trump from being able to run for president. So with this indictment, they're now down really to the absolute last-ditch effort to try and smear Trump and prevent him from running and try and distract him enough that he doesn't put on a good campaign to win the presidency again. That's what's going on here. They have nothing left. The Democrats have nothing left. So what they're down to is they're down to a charge that, as I mentioned before, the statute of limitations have run out on as far as the misdemeanor version goes. So they're trying for felony charges, 34 of them, which is ridiculous. Which, if you look at what legal experts are saying, will not stick. That Trump is going to walk free from this. I hate to say it, he's probably not going to get a fair trial there. But you throw it out to appeals, it's not going to stick. Now, even more troubling, though, than the indictment of Trump and the just absolute panic Democrats are in at this point to try and keep him out of office, even more troubling is what the indictment of Trump means and represents. It erases any and all doubt that we are indeed a third world banana republic. That's what it does. This is clearly, at this point, with these charges, 34 of them to be exact, a political hit job trying to use the judicial system to intimidate political opponents. That is what we are. That's what they do in third world banana republics. We now live in a country where we don't vote against or vote out someone with whom we don't agree with. We create a crime and try to make it stick to that a political opponent we don't want in office, we don't want running for office, we don't want anywhere near office. That's what makes us a third world country. Makes us no better than a third world country. Third world country just doesn't describe, or I should say doesn't just describe the living conditions in that country. Third world country just isn't limited to describing living conditions. It also describes the political climate. And I will argue, go and look at our big cities. Look at our big cities, especially the inner cities, and then go compare that to something, you know, in Haiti or the Dominican Republic or the slums of India or South American country. Tell me we're not a third world country. This Trump indictment, it sets a dangerous precedent. It says, it signals, we are going to go after our political opponents from a legal aspect and make up a crime and try and make it stick to them. It opens up that can of worms. Once again, here you have the Democrats bucking precedent, bucking norms, trying to grab as much power as they can, and they're only going to screw themselves in the long run, because now that they've done this, I want to see Republicans going after Obama. I want to see them going after Biden. Hell, go back to Clinton. You can go after George W. Bush, too, for all I care. Go after all of them. It opens up Pandora's box to this. Now, Alan Dershowitz, who is not, by any stretch of the imagination, a conservative. He's a, you know, expert legal mind. He's teaches at Harvard. He puts it this way in an interview with the Epoch Times. Dershowitz says this: it really endangers the rule of law for all Americans. Today, it's Trump. Tomorrow, it's a Democrat. The day after tomorrow, it's your Uncle Charlie or your niece or your nephew. He is spot on. And for the Democrats out there who don't think that this is going to come for them eventually, think again, it always does. We have a breakdown of the rule of law. We have a breakdown here, and we've had a breakdown when it comes to Trump, of our American norms, our American values, as far as it goes to the legal system. Justice is supposed to be blind. The facts are supposed to speak to the case. Crimes are supposed to be investigated, looking for the suspect, not a suspect being investigated for a crime, not a suspect being identified and then investigated for a crime. That makes us a third world republic. And I will argue with you all day on that point, because it's more, like I said, I had someone post that say we are not a third world republic. Bull crap, we are. It goes well beyond the living conditions and status of that country and into what is your political climate. This Trump indictment, if it wasn't already blown, our credibility is blown across the globe. How can we go in and point fingers at other countries that do this sort of crap, that oppress their political opponents in this manner, and then we're doing the same thing here at home? We're supposed to be spreading democracy. This is not democracy. This is tyranny. It's banana republic stuff. And so those Democrats out there that think this won't come for them, think again. While you may think you're on the right side of things today, especially if you oppose Trump and support this indictment, It could very well be tomorrow that you're the one getting indicted for political purposes because you dared speak out against the regime, because you didn't agree to everything, every last little detail in their manifesto that they demand you believe in. It could be you tomorrow being indicted and thrown in jail for who knows how long. Ask the January 6th people if they're ever going to get out of jail now that all this other information's come forth. It could be you tomorrow. Just because you have a Democrat next to your name today doesn't mean that you won't get picked on tomorrow. Because once they run out of Republicans, once they run out of enough people on the wrong side of things, so to speak, they'll come after you if you aren't 100% bought into their ideology. And that's what people don't get. And that's what people need to understand, especially on the Democrat side of things. All right, moving on. It seems that Democrats, speaking of Democrats, they do like their gas stoves too. Now, there's 29 Democrats that have joined Republicans in voting to block the Biden administration from abolishing gas cooking stoves. Now what does this whole gas stove fiasco illustrate for us? One, that the government, in particular Democrats, want to control every aspect of your life, as evidenced by the vast majority of Democrats who still voted for getting rid of gas cooking stoves. So there's still 180-some that voted for the rule that says, yeah, get rid of the gas cooking stoves. So you have you have Democrats who just want to control every aspect of your life. They think they're God. They think they know better than you. So they want to tell you what you can and cannot do, where you can and cannot go, what you can and cannot cook on. That's the first thing it tells us. It tells us that these people can't stand that you can make your own life choices, that you're smart enough to do this, that you don't need an expert to tell you what kind of stove you need to cook on. They can't stand that you get to choose the way you prepare your food in this case. And the second thing it tells us, that the bureaucracy has too much power. There's too many rulemaking powers that lie within bureaucrats who are not elected by we the people. These officials that we have elected that are in the House of Representatives, that are in the Senate, these officials that we have elected to represent our interests have punted so many powers to the bureaucracy over the years that have given the bureaucracies too much rulemaking authority that we are in a position where people unaccountable to us, the voter, the everyday American, we have too many people that are unaccountable to us making decisions and rules that we must live by. The bureaucracy controls our life, not our elected officials. If you think that's the opposite, think again. Our elected officials in Congress have basically stripped down what they do to budgetary things and sending money other places. All their other rulemaking and everything else, they've for the most part punted to the bureaucracy. Bureaucracy controls our lives now. They spy on us. They tell us what we can and cannot do. Sure, these bureaucracies supposedly have oversight, but really, think about it, what has come from the dog and pony show hearings of bureaucrats that they've hauled in front of these congressional committees? What's come of it? Nothing. Nothing. Absolutely nothing. That's what's come of it. Nothing. None of these corruptocrats running bureaucracies ever have anything happen to them. And they're no longer embarrassed by getting hauled in front of Congress. They're no longer embarrassed when they stutter and stammer at a question our congressional leaders ask them. They're not embarrassed by that. They just make it up on the fly. They're obviously lying. That's why they're stuttering and stammering all over the place. They certainly aren't removed from their posts. Fauci lasted how long in government through how many presidential administrations? Tell me again that something happens when these clowns are supposedly held accountable by Congress. They're not. Nothing ever happens to them. Not even when a new presidential administration comes in place. The decisions and rules a bureaucracy is making are the decisions and rules we pay our elected officials to make for us. We pay them to put the laws in place, not an unaccountable bureaucrat. It's time we start pushing our representatives to start eliminating the bureaucracy, eliminate these, the CDC, the IRS, the everything that's come at from a bureaucratic standpoint after the Constitution was written. Time to eliminate them. We don't pay them. We don't elect them to make decisions for us. We elect Congress members to make decisions for us. We need to push our elected representatives to take back their responsibilities as our lawmakers. That's what this gas stove fiasco represents. It's just yet another illustration of how our elected representatives have punted their duties because it makes it easier for themselves to get reelected. Subscriptions are one of the big ways podcasts get discovered, so if you could please do me a favor, pause whatever platform you are listening on or viewing on and hit that subscribe button. It will give you an alert whenever a new Living with Liberty is published, and the subscriptions help us get into the recommendations so others can find the show. Okay, up next, we have the Restrict Act. And as you may have guessed, the Restrict Act, you may have heard, I should say, it is really geared towards banning TikTok, but you're probably not going to be surprised when I tell you the Restrict Act has nothing to do with banning TikTok and everything to do with taking more of your liberty and your freedom. It has everything to do with furthering the American surveillance state and probably putting us on a path to social credit scores. Now, the solution really is simple when it comes to TikTok. In order for it to keep operating in the United States, it needs to be divested to an American shareholder, period. ByteDance and the Communist Party of China need to be totally removed from any sort of oversight, management, ownership of TikTok. If it's going to continue here, divest it. If it's not divested, then it needs to be shut down. That's as simple as it gets when it comes to TikTok. Fits on a 3x5 index card. We don't necessarily even need an act of Congress to get rid of TikTok, but if they want to write a bill, it'll fit on an index card. Divest or get out. Period. That's as simple as it needs to be. Pass it through Congress tomorrow. Congress is using this as an excuse to further restrict. Like I said, they're using this. Never let a crisis go to waste. They're using this TikTok, banning TikTok, as an excuse to further restrict freedom and liberty. If they weren't, like I said, 3x5 index card, hand it over to Xi and ByteDance's executives, here's what you need to do. That's all that's needed. If they weren't trying to restrict freedom and liberty, there wouldn't be a huge hundreds of pages bill, however many pages this thing is. It only would need to read divest or shut down. Those are your options, period. But, like I said, never letting our crisis go to waste, our elected officials on both sides of the aisle have decided that, hey, this is a great opportunity to take more liberty away from the people and to further enhance and enable our surveillance state. Now, the Restrict Act itself, they're selling this as a TikTok, let's get rid of TikTok thing. It makes no mention, though, of TikTok or its parent company, ByteDance. None in the bill whatsoever. This bill is being sold as, hey, we've got to get rid of TikTok somehow. Here's a bill to do it. But it doesn't mention TikTok at all. But according to a Reason.com article by J.D. Tussle, titled, "The Restrict Act Would Restrict a Lot More Than TikTok," it would hand a whole lot of power to the government, particularly the Secretary of Commerce, to review and prohibit certain transactions between persons in the United States and foreign adversaries regarding information and communications technology. Sounds like a big old recipe for enabling more surveillance on the population, right? Once again, our elected officials are willing to hand over their job to a bureaucrat who already has way more power than they should. Who is the Secretary of Commerce to be reviewing and prohibiting transactions between people in the U.S. and foreign adversaries regarding information and communications technology? Who is the Secretary of Commerce to step in and tell me that I can interact with somebody in China or Russia or Iran? Who are they to tell me that I can't do that? What is it with Republicans who are supposed to be for freedom and liberty signing on to bills that do the complete opposite? Now, what does this mean? What really does the Restrict Act mean? Well, it means no longer would you have the choice of VPN to use to hide your online activity. You really couldn't use a VPN at all, and we'll get into that in a bit. Now, Tim Stark from the Washington Compost notes that VPNs would be covered by the Restrict Act. Not only that, but according to CoinCenter, the language of the bill could potentially be used to block or disrupt cryptocurrency transactions and, in extreme cases, block Americans' access to open source tools or protocols like Bitcoin. Now, equally as troubling, if that wasn't troubling enough, equally as troubling, is the Restrict Act is not limited to foreign apps. And this gets back to what I was talking about the foreign VPNs before. It's not limited to foreign apps. It wouldn't be limited to foreign VPNs. This next line I'm going to read here is directly from the bill. No person may cause or aid, abet, counsel, command, induce, procure, permit, or approve the doing of any act prohibited by or the omission of any act required by any regulation, order, direction, mitigation, measure, prohibition, or other authorization or directive issued under this act. In short, we become China. You would not be able to use your American VPN to evade the restrictions put in place on foreign sites and services. So if you wanted to still, let's say we get rid of TikTok, we boot them, we say they're illegal here, you could not, under this act, use your American-made VPN to hide what you're doing logging into TikTok. That's what this means. It means that we, as a nation, are now no better than China. We will restrict, if this goes into law, it says the American government can restrict your access to whatever it wants to, basically. Now, First Amendment, does this get challenged under the First Amendment? Yes, I think it does. Does the First Amendment prevail? I hope so. I'm sure it would all the way once it got to the Supreme Court. The lower courts is a crapshoot, but once we got to the Supreme Court, the way it's constructed right now, I'm sure this act wouldn't fly under the First Amendment because you're restricting someone's freedom of speech, freedom of expression, freedom of choice. But what do we see here? They're trying to make us a totalitarian state. We already know they surveil us. We already know that there's the NSA, I'm sure the CIA, the FBI for sure, are all monitoring us. So they want to put this act in place under the guise of it protects us from TikTok and the Chinese Communist Party from taking all your information. Well, that can be easily solved. Write a bill that is similar to what they have in Europe when it comes to personal data. And then apply it to every social media company. That solves a problem right there with that. They don't want to do that, though, because the government uses big tech to spy on us. We know that. So you couldn't use your VPN to evade the restrictions. You'd get put in jail. You'd get heavy fines. Now, what else does this mean? Well, with the obvious push that we've seen toward government-run digital currency, this act, they are most assuredly using it to block cryptocurrency. So what would be your only option for currency at that point? Whatever the Federal Reserve wants to give you in terms of digital currency. That would be you couldn't pay for anything in Bitcoin or any of the other cryptocurrencies out there. You would only, because they'd be illegal under this act. So taking away that ability as well for you to, in essence, barter with cryptocurrency. This isn't about restricting TikTok. This is about restricting you, your liberty, your freedom, your ability to engage in commerce the way you wish with whomever you wish. This is about furthering government control over your life and telling you what you can and cannot do. Common theme today. If it wasn't about restricting your freedom, your liberty, if it wasn't about more government control, there wouldn't be an in-depth dive and definition into every nook and cranny of online activity that the Restrict Act is going into. The, like I said, the requirement to take TikTok off our books would fit on a 3x5 index card. Divest or get out, easy. Divest to an American company with no Chinese influence or get out. Period. That's all it takes. So if TikTok was truly the target, that would be the focus of the bill. It would say, TikTok, you need to divest to an American company, no Chinese ownership, no ties to the CCP, or we're just going to shut it down. That's all it would take. But that's not the point. The point isn't to shut down TikTok. Elected officials are using this as an attempt to grab more power, power they don't deserve, power they're not entitled to. That's what the Restrict Act is about. If you are listening to the audio-only show and your platform allows for reviews, please give us a 5-star review. It helps others find the show. Whether you are listening to the audio version or viewing on Rumble or YouTube, hit the Rumble or thumbs up button. The more interactions we have, the more the show gets into the recommendations made by the algorithms, and the more we are able to spread the truth. All right, finishing up for today. As many of you know, I've been working the polls. I have been since last year. That's one of the things I said. You want to ensure election integrity, these are some things you can do. Working the polls is one of them. Being a poll observer is one of them. So that's what I do. I work the polls, make sure everything runs smoothly, everything's fair. And I'm proud to report our town here, our city, does a fantastic job in that. And the important thing is I don't know which way the people heading this up, I don't know which way they lean right or left, which is how it should be. Their only interest is ensuring a free and fair election. Cool. So that's what I do. So many of you know I work the polls. Now, there's a lot of insights you can gather working the polls. One of the things that we have to do after polls close and the tickets are run for the counts through the machines and everything, one of the things we have to do is sort out the write-in ballots from the regular ballots. So, you don't like the candidates there, you might write somebody in. So what we have to do is sort those ones out. They go in their own pile. If we have an official registered write-in candidate, those get counted up in terms of that candidate. But a lot of times it's Mickey Mouse, or I think we had Ron DeSantis running for school board around here in Trump. So you get those kinds of things too that people write in. But you got to sort those out. They're kept separate because they have to be tallied. They don't get tallied in the machine, with who's officially on the ballot, right? They have to get hand counted. So doing those sorts of things and having to do that, sort through the ballots, you get a bit of a feel of how people fill out their ballots. You get an insight into the mind of the voter, if you will. And one thing I learned during our spring election this week is that abortion rights, and rights in air quotes for those of you listening to the audio only version, are a lot bigger issue than we conservatives want to believe. Myself included, right? I didn't think that we'd have a ton of conservatives crossing over at the end of the day because of abortion rights, but I'll get into it a bit here in our spring election. It did. They did. Conservatives crossed over in big numbers, I want to say, given what I know about our town and the political makeup of our town here. Now, our spring election here in Wisconsin, it was a pretty big one, actually. We had a state Supreme Court seat up for election here. So it was as far as a spring election goes, it was a pretty big election. Now, there weren't any primaries for governor or president or anything, but having that state Supreme Court seat on the ballot made this a big spring election around here. So as I was sorting out ballots, I noticed there were a lot of crossover votes here for the liberal judge running for that state Supreme Court seat. Meaning, what I mean by that is people voted conservative candidates up and down the ballot, except for the state Supreme Court race. Now, I've mentioned it here before that where I live is a pretty healthy conservative majority here, but the liberal candidate squeaked out a win in our town. Now, they didn't win by many votes here in our town, but in a town that's 60-40 split, you would have expected the conservative candidate to have a pretty healthy margin of victory. They didn't. They lost by, I don't quite remember what the final tallies here in town were, but it was a lot closer than the statewide than the statewide race ended up. But I knew once I saw that liberal candidate squeaked out a healthy win, or not a healthy win, but squeaked out a win here, that it was a healthy crossover of conservatives voting for her that made that happen. And once I saw the tallies at the poll, the final tallies, I knew that the conservative candidate was going to lose statewide. That was done. If they didn't win here by their usual, call it 15 to 20% margin, I knew statewide they were done. And they lost by, you know, a few percentage points here. So I knew they were done. And truth be told, they did. It was a 10-point margin. It wasn't even close statewide on the state Supreme Court race here. Wasn't even close. Which tells me, at a 10-point margin, because here in Wisconsin, we're pretty red outside of Milwaukee and Madison. Those are the two big strongholds of Democrats. There's a few other counties around the state that are typically Democrat counties, but they're a lot closer Democrat counties than Milwaukee and Madison. And once I saw here that the conservative justice lost, you know, by a few points, I knew that they weren't going to win statewide. And they didn't. It's 10-point margin. It wasn't even close. That it tells me conservatives around the state, no matter what county they were in, red or blue areas, crossed over. They voted the same way. That's how you get a 10-point margin, because even with Milwaukee and Madison, elections are typically pretty close around here within a few percentage points, right? There's really, I think our governor race in last fall was about 4%. The Trump Biden presidential election was a percent or less. So Milwaukee and Madison don't have the outsize influence typically that like a Chicago would in Illinois, or a New York City would in New York. But they do have some influence that does need to be overcome statewide. Typically, depending on the candidate, we can overcome it. We haven't been lately, quite honestly, in the statewide elections, though. I've covered that before. Our Republican Party in the state needs to do a better job of making inroads in Milwaukee and Madison. Anyway, so I knew 10-point margin, that means it wasn't just Milwaukee and Madison, it was statewide. You don't lose by 10 points in Wisconsin when you're a conservative, unless there was a ton of conservative crossover, and that's what happened. Now, I'm never, ever going to tell anyone not to vote their conscience. I certainly still will vote my conscience, but we need to have some different thoughts and different conversations here about this if we're going to be serious about, as conservatives, especially conservatives in swing states, winning elections going forward. We have to face a reality here in these swing states, is that there's a long-term game that we have to play when it comes to hot-button issues like abortion. There just is, right? I'm not going to tell you, don't ever vote your conscience. I'm not ever going to admonish someone for saying, well, I got to vote my conscience, and my conscience is absolutely abortion's wrong under any circumstance. I'm going to sit this one out. I'm not going to sit here and tell you, well, you have to vote. Your conscience is your conscience. You have to wrestle with that. You have to do what's right in your own mind. I get that. I will do the same thing, but we have to have some different thoughts here. We have to have some food for thought, especially if we're serious about advancing the conservative cause. That's the reality here in swing states. Wisconsin, we're not Oklahoma. We can't just, where it's bright red all over, or even Florida at this point, or Ohio. We're just not. We don't have the luxury of being absolutist here. We have to take incremental steps here. So what the reality here is that we may end up that the best candidate to capture an office and advance the conservative cause and advance freedom and liberty has a more socially liberal stance on a hot issue like abortion. That, and it's a stance that we may not like. And again, I'm not going to tell you, don't vote your conscience. Do what you've got to do. We're just going to have to wrestle with that. That's the reality of things here in the state. Hard lines on this issue, on the abortion issue, are not going to fly, especially in swing states like Wisconsin. It's just not. We have a Republican-controlled legislature. We have a governor's mansion that has been in Democrat hands now for going on 5 years. So we've had split government. And now our Supreme Court, because of this abortion issue, quite honestly, that was the issue that flipped it. Guaranteed. Because no conservative in their right mind that values freedom and liberty would vote for a liberal justice who's going to go after then or have it open, have the Pandora's box of conservative causes be opened up to be ruled against at the Supreme Court level, things like election integrity. You're just not, if you're thinking clearly about the bigger picture in every issue, right? Not just the abortion issue. And it's unfortunately, it's made a mess of our court now. Our Supreme Court is going to be in liberal hands for at least the next 2 years. So we are going to have to wrestle with that. That's just a fact. Hard lines, absolutism isn't going to fly in Wisconsin. The change here has to be gradual. We have to work our way up to it. And honestly, when Roe was knocked down, I mentioned this before on a previous show, when Roe was knocked down, our state reverted to an 1849 law. So our abortion laws, we don't have anything newer than 1849, the year after we became a state. And that 1849 law, the only exception in there is for the mother's life to be in danger, and you have to get two opinions from doctors that the mother's life is in danger, which I think personally is ridiculous. If my life's in danger from a pregnancy, why do I need a second opinion? That's a pretty easy thing to tell, I think. But we can't, the hard lines, we're going to have to wrestle with that. We lose too many independents, and certainly as the last election showed, we lost a fair number of conservative votes to one issue. Sidebar here, I don't think it should have been an issue. The Supreme Court, the race for Supreme Court, these issues shouldn't even have been mentioned. It should be on the rule of law and protecting the rule of law, not what someone's personal beliefs are. So it was an absolute despicable campaign, if you ask me, for our state Supreme Court here. But obviously it worked because people don't care about the rule of law. By and large, the conservatives weren't even thinking about the ancillary things that could come up from having a liberal-leaning Supreme Court. The things that we could lose, the legislation that has been passed in the last 10, 15 years here in Wisconsin that have made it a better place to live from a tax standpoint, from a business climate standpoint. They weren't thinking about that. It was one issue. Oh, well, she's gonna rule on the abortion, rule for the 1849 law to be abolished. Well, I'm going to vote for her then. There's also an interesting point brought up. I was watching a little bit of the coverage in the local channels. The guy that ran for state attorney general here brought up a point that anybody running, and this is a rule in our state Supreme Court, that anybody running for Supreme Court that signals how they would rule on a particular case needs to recuse themselves from that case. So we'll see if that happens, because like I said, the justice that won here that was elected to our Supreme Court was open, honest, and overt about how they would rule on an abortion case. So that's just something, I guess I can't say it enough. We're going to have to wrestle as conservatives, especially in swing states. We're going to have to wrestle with that, period. And we're going to have to accept the consequences that if we say, I just can't vote for, it's a conservative, but they're too socially liberal for me, then we're going to have to live with whatever consequences come of that. If that means we're under Democrat rule and split government and conservative causes are somewhat to not be in advance, then that's what we'll have to live with. That's what we voted for. But that's something we're going to have to keep in the back of our mind going forward, that the absolutist mentality isn't going to fly. The other thing, messaging is going to have to get a whole lot better from Republicans. Once again, I can't harp on this one enough either. They're going to have to do a much better job of outlining the total package of what will be lost if we as conservatives don't circle the wagons. We as conservatives have to do better looking at the big picture. Again, absolutism isn't the way to go here. And you know, I'm not an absolutist for the most part anyway. If we continue, especially in Wisconsin, we continue with this absolute path on a total abortion ban, on insisting that the 1849 law stay on the books, we're going to lose statewide Republicans are going to lose the statewide elections here. It's a given. It's just going to happen. Especially if the messaging doesn't get better, saying, okay, here's why abortion's bad, and oh, by the way, here's the things you're going to lose if you elect someone that's a liberal-leaning justice representative, whatever. You have to make it real. You have to make the losses real, and Republicans don't get that part of the messaging. They just don't. Now, our assembly speaker realized this. He realized that this absolutism, this 1849 law, it's just not what the people are asking for. I'm sure he has polls or whatever that told him, hey, we got a lot of conservatives here that are, they are pro-choice. Let's face it. I mean, and that's the other piece of this too. Republicans, we're the party of pro-choice. I covered it before, like 40% of Republicans, or we're the party of pro-life. I covered it before. Republicans, there's 40% that are more aligned with the pro-choice and favor, you know, some sort of exceptions, at least. That's lost on the party. Absolutism, it just isn't going to fly. Now, so our assembly speaker realizes, he got his polls, whatever, and introduce a bill that would have updated the abortion law on our books to include more exceptions in addition to the provision for the danger to the mother's life. So it's provisions. I mean, provisions like you've heard of anywhere. Rape, incest, you know, things like that. Now, in a state like Wisconsin, like I said, it's incremental steps. And I thought this was an incremental step on the way to an outright ban, right? Don't get me wrong here. I would love a total ban. I've said it before, I do see and understand the reasoning for some exceptions. Grant the exceptions. And honestly, that's the, especially in a, again, I can't say this enough, I feel, especially in a swing state, you have to take that into consideration. And you have to take into consideration the fact that just because someone's a conservative doesn't make them pro-life. Now, issues are very rarely black and white, and abortion is no exception. Here's the other thing, too, when it comes to this, when it comes to abortion, because Democrats, there are pro-life Democrats. The Democrats aren't the party of pro-choice, right? There's 30 to 40% of that party that's pro-life. But guess what? Democrats don't cross over. If Democrats in a Supreme Court race here crossed over, the conservative candidate probably would have won, but they don't cross over. Why? Because Democrats put a premium on looking at the big picture in relation to their ideology and what they want to advance in terms of their agenda. That's why. You can call it the hive mind, the Borg from Star Trek, the singular one-track mind. We make fun of it, but, you know, they don't cross over. They stick to it blue until they die. They don't look at just one issue. They say, okay, that's one issue. I can live with it. Now, it's probably part of the liberal agenda where they don't have much remorse for, or much respect, I should say, for life in general anyway, it seems. Some of them. There's a lot of, I don't want to generalize every Democrat. There's a lot of good ones out there for law and order and respect life. But they're not crossing over. That's the whole thing. You see more and more of them leaving the party now as it gets just more and more filled more and more with more and more lunatics and more lunatic ideology. But when it comes to voting, they don't cross over. Your average everyday Democrat, they're not crossing over voting like the conservatives do. they've decided, Democrats have decided, that it's best to fight the battle inside the party to try and amend the party platform as opposed to fighting it out at the ballot box like conservatives who cross over do. Now, we as conservatives need to do the same. We need to look at the big picture, not just a single issue. As an example, here in Wisconsin, not only does our abortion law, like here's the big picture of this, it not only is that abortion law now on the table in front of the Supreme Court, a liberal Supreme Court at that, so we know how that's going to go, but other things like election integrity laws, the congressional maps that were just drawn, other conservative-led laws that have made life in Wisconsin over the last decade plus better and more amenable from a tax standpoint and from a business climate standpoint. The crossing over by conservatives because of a single issue was very short-sighted from a voting and voter standpoint. We need to do a better job fighting for ideas within the party and during the primaries instead of at the ballot box in a general election. Again, never ever going to tell anybody, do not vote your conscience. That's what you should do. But we need to consider what that means big picture. And if we are willing or not to compromise on one thing for a greater to advance a greater cause. Now, before I go, don't forget to tune in live to Rucksack Radio on Tuesdays at 7 p.m. Central for Laughs and Liberty with Tom and me. You can watch us live on Riverside FM, Rumble, YouTube, or Twitch. We'd love to engage with you all in the chats. It's always a good time. We talk a little bit current events, politics of the day, and then we get into some fun things, some videos. We, you know, make fun of some stuff. One of my favorites is the workplace videos, workplace safety, always big, right? So those are always fun to pick apart and make fun of a little bit. But so tune in live, 7 p.m. on Tuesdays, 7 p.m. Central, Laughs and Liberty. Friends, that's my show for today. Thank you for tuning in. Please check out my website, livingwithlibertypodcast.com. There you'll find links to my past shows, my original articles, as well as other resources to help arm you with knowledge in fighting off the prevailing narratives of the day. Well, on my website, shop my store, Living with Liberty Outfitters. Lastly, I'd be so grateful if you shared, subscribed, and left a positive review of the show, should your listening platform allow. Subscribing helps us move up the charts and helps more people find the truth.